Welcome, everybody. This is episode 11 of the podcast. I've been talking about this for a really, really long time. I've been hinting at you guys that we're going to have guests on the show. And today I've invited, and luckily we finally had the time to make this happen. I've been trying to schedule her in for like, how long now? About 3 months.
3 months. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So guys, this is Alexandra Lin. She's from Sydney, and I'm going to give the floor to you. Introduce yourself. Tell for the three listeners who don't know who you are, tell us about yourself.
Stop. I am one of those three listeners, by the way. I love the Richard Sage podcast. This is truly one of my favorite things to listen to. But hi, everyone. Hi. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Alexandra Lin. I am a content creator based out of Sydney, Australia. Was a full-time content creator up until very recently. I'm also a Twitch partner, and I also work for a charity as the gaming and a community executive. I had to think about that for a second. but yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Yeah, so my first question, so I'm going to give you a random question that I didn't tell you about before. So this is a bit of a fun one. So
yeah,
this is what this is.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So this is a question I'm going to ask every guest. And we're going to compile all the answers and put a tally on it. So well, here's the question. Are you ready for it? Mm-hmm. Does pineapple belong on pizza?
This is a hot topic in my community. I'm in two minds about it, right? Can I be like impartial? Like, I feel like no. Short answer, no. I don't think it does. However, I do like pineapple in like cooked formats. Like, have you ever tried like Brazilian pineapple? I don't know if there's an actual term for that, but like
Brazilian pineapple,
It's amazing. We like do it over like an open flame, and like they put cinnamon sugar on it. Oh, it's incredible. So I'm not opposed to pineapple being like warm and heated up and, you know, cooked. Like, that's nice. But for some reason, every single time I've had pineapple on pizza from like your Domino's, your Pizza Hut, like all those just typical pizza chains, it just tastes like garbage. It tastes like hot, soggy something on my pizza, and that is not enjoyable. So I challenge anyone to give me a place to go to that does good pineapple and pizza.
I'm gonna have to say, yeah, that's kind of true. Like, for me, I'll be honest, I don't know if it belongs on pizza. I don't mind it on pizza. Like, I'll get it in my Subway roll. That's about it. You know what
your
I mean?
Subway roll?
Yeah, I know, a bit expensive, paying for extras. Like, and then
you
they
get pineapple in your Subway, like with bread and other like you know, condiments and stuff.
Yeah, dude.
Now that I feel like that's more of a hot take than it is to have it on pizza. To be fair. Oh my gosh, what else do you get on your Subway roll?
Sometimes I'll get the main sauce I get is spicy mayo. I always get spicy mayo.
Ooh, we love spicy mayo. Yeah. Like, I don't, like a Chipotle mayo.
I don't always get lettuce though. Sometimes I just feel like spinach.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. We do love that. We love good spinach. But thank you. That's my hot take good. On pizza.
Yep, so that's going to be asked to all the guests, and none of them, unless they watch the episodes, they'll probably know that the question is coming. So we'll see if they pick up on it. All right, so I got some questions. We got some questions that we've kind of pre-planned before the recording, but we're kind of just going to flow from there. So I wanted to ask, just for the listeners who are listening. So you said you're a Twitch partner. Mm-hmm. How did you discover Twitch? Where did it all begin?
Oh, that is a really good question. So I had known about Twitch for, quite some time. I think I had been on the platform for, I want to say maybe a year prior to me going like live on Twitch. So I remember the date I first went live. I went live on the 14th of August, 2019. So about a year prior, or maybe at the start of 2019, was when I like started actively using Twitch. I've always been into video games. I've always been into content creating and like filmmaking and all that. So, you know, to be on Twitch and to like know the platform existed, I think to then finally participate in it and actually talk in a chat and, you know, interact with different creators on the platform was such a unique experience that I just like instantly fell in love with it. And I feel like you yourself can really relate to that, because I know you've told the story many times on your stream about like the first time you spoke in someone's chat and then they responded to you and you're like, whoa.
It's like, yeah, this person just talked to me.
Yeah, exactly. So I had a really similar experience. And I think you were probably one of the first people that I like actively started chatting to in like Twitch streams before I went live myself. And it was just such a nice feeling to be able to like develop like, I say friends very loosely, but like, you know, develop like a community around your own, like, sorry, not around your own streams, but like around, you know, you when you start to like, you know, be a part of multiple communities. And Yeah, I guess for me, that was something that I was able to sort of, yeah, tap into and dive into before I even started streaming back in 2019.
Yeah, I remember I wonder who found each other first. Did you find my stream first or did I find yours?
Oh, that's a good question.
It was a couple years ago now, so.
Yeah, I think I might have found you first because I think you were doing Ocarina speed runs at the time, and that was like one of the only things that like I kind of really took interest in on Twitch because I used to watch like GDQs and stuff. And so when I found out that you'd run at GDQ one year, and I think I was blown away. I was like, I have to watch this guy. I was like so enamored by, you know, like the run and everything about speedrunning. And I had so much admiration for speedrunners because I just never thought that it was something that I would ever be able to achieve myself. And I'm pretty sure I jumped into your stream first. I think.
Yeah, I think, you know what, by the way, for the listeners who don't know, so GDQ is Games Done Quick. It's a charity organization over in USA. They do events year round. They do a lot of online events now. I actually went a couple years ago and participated, and it was pretty amazing. They do fundraising for different organizations like Doctors Without Borders, cancer research. So, and what usually happens is that people will find a lot of speed runs, which is games played really fast on YouTube, and Games Done Quick uploads it to YouTube. And that's how I found speedrunning. Many, many years ago. I'm pretty sure that's how Alex also discovered it initially. And then eventually a lot of us found ourselves on Twitch, which is the live streaming website that most of our streamers will spend time on, even though these days there's more other platforms, which we'll talk about later. So Alex, yeah. I got a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
So you had a journey to partner, but there was a step before that. So Twitch affiliate, how did that happen?
Oh, yes. So, so when I started streaming back in 2019, I was really quite fortunate that because I'd spent quite a lot of time, within these different communities on Twitch, I had already developed a good little group of people who, you know, when I went live were interested in saying hello and hanging out. So I'm very fortunate that my trip to affiliate only took me 2 weeks, which I think is the minimum time you have to stream before you can actually apply to be an affiliate. So I was really lucky. That was my first step into this world of content creating, which I feel so blessed to be a part of right now. But I actually started in my garage. I didn't, when I first started streaming, there wasn't a spare room in the house that I was in to, set up a computer, set up anything else. So we had a really crappy IKEA desk that would like bow in the middle. It was really not good. It was so bad. And then I had, my partner at the time, I had his computer, like I borrowed it and I borrowed a monitor. And I had like an old, I think like microphone that I had from university when I studied music, just basically picked up, like I pretty much jerry-rigged something together. Like I just pulled all this stuff together in my garage. I had the worst audio treatment you could possibly think of, because imagine a garage and how like echoey it is and how like the concrete was so bad. And I used to have to mute my Blue Yeti microphone when a truck would go past or a car would go past because it was so loud. very like humble beginnings, not starting off with anything flashy, just the bare bones. You know, I mean, I say that some people start off with far less. Like I was very fortunate to have, you know, a PC that I could borrow. And, you know, I think I ended up saving up a little bit of money to buy like a C922 Logitech webcam. And I, you know, stayed up for the Blue Yeti. So eventually, very, very humble beginnings.
Yeah. And you know what I think? Like, I think humble beginnings are completely underrated because this is my perspective on it. And I went tangent too long on this.
I think it's
almost awesome for the viewers to be part of your journey in your growth, because like I'll take it from me as a streamer and also as a viewer. Like I've went into streams and this person has like a 10 grand setup. Nothing wrong with that. If you've got the funds, go for it. But I also found it really endearing, or like just nice to see someone start with what they have, very humble beginnings, and grow from there. Because I did the same thing, and Alex knows, like I started with a laptop that I had from university in 2011. Yep. This thing was like gonna explode. I had to put ice packs underneath the laptop to cool down the CPU because the CPU fan wasn't working. Oh, I had cable internet for the first 2 years of my streaming career. I was streaming at 400 bit rate. So what that means is I was streaming at the lowest quality you can imagine.
Oh, bit rate. Oh God.
Yeah. You remember, you know what it's like.
I do, so, especially in Australian internet as well. It's not good.
Yeah, it's bad. But the thing is, it's like we both started with humble beginnings. So if you're a streamer and you're considering wanting to take this on and you feel like you don't have the equipment, the internet, I'm telling you right now, that is not the most important factor. And Alex can chime in on this. Mm-hmm. If you start with what you have and have the mindset to grow with what you have, your audience, if they like you, if they like what you're doing, they believe in you, they're going to back you. Like, they're going to show up for you. They're going to support you. Because I find that a lot of creators believe it's the technical things that make them stand out. Oh, it's my lens, it's my camera, it's my lighting, it's my microphone. Sure, that can help. But I wanted to ask your take on it. What's your take on, you know, not having to obsess with quality when you first begin?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. When you first, okay, so, oh, okay, we're getting into it. So when you first start streaming, you are likely, I mean, everyone's backgrounds are different, right? But, you know, when you first start streaming, you likely haven't made any revenue from streaming. You haven't made any income from content creating. So, you know, you don't have that disposable income to like pump into it, right? But at the same time, you know, there are so many big stream, like quote unquote big streamers out there who still stream with a C922 or a C920 who are doing just fine. You know, you don't need to have the best of the best quality equipment to get started. In fact, I feel like the thing and the thread of continuity between all of like the bigger streamers out there and the streamers who have like really grown their platforms is that they had some really good ideas and they just made it work with what they had. Pretty sure people like Ludwig started with like the bare bones setup, right? So, you know, I guess if there's any bit of advice I could give, if you want to get started and you don't have the gear to get started, just ask, and also, you know, just get what you need, like get the bare bones. I think the only other bit of advice I would get is if you can invest in good audio equipment so people can hear you well, you know, and that doesn't have to be expensive. I say invest in good audio equipment. I mean, get something that captures your voice really nicely. And that could be a $20 microphone from Amazon. Like those do really well these days, just making sure that your audio is clear so people can hear you well. But you do not need the flashiest equipment to get started. You just need an idea and some motivation.
And speaking of ideas, so we've alluded to what Alex did on Twitch. So let's talk about the actual game that you streamed. What was the game that you streamed that you focused on as a niche? Because I remember watching you do some casual stuff when you first started. What was it that you're like, aha, I'm going to settle on this. And that's what made you, and you dived in, worked in. What made you blow up? Let's go. What was it?
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's a throwing it back. Yeah. So when I first started streaming, I did dabble in a few games. I'm a very much Nintendo girly. I love Nintendo. I love most things they put out. But I love more than anything else the Legend of Zelda series. It is truly my favorite series. I grew up playing all the games. I did start with Ocarina of Time and 64 as a 90s baby. So for me, that game, you know, holds a special place in my heart. But for me at the time, the most accessible thing to play was my Switch. And I ended up purchasing a secondhand, and I remember going to this person's house to buy it, a secondhand Elgato capture card. And I remember my poor community had to listen to like the latency because I couldn't figure out like how to offset the audio
latency from the external
capture card. It was so bad. But yeah, so the most accessible thing for me to play was my Switch. So the catalog of games that I had were like, you know, Breath of the Wild or Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. I had Animal Crossing. I think I had Link's Awakening on there as well. So, but for me, I found the most comfort and the most fun in playing Breath of the Wild because I was so confident in that game and I just knew so much about it. And I guess for me, it was something that I found that my community also really resonated with. So I started casually playing that on stream. And then I think the tipping point to where I started learning the speed run of Breath of the Wild was when, and I remember this very, very like fondly, was I got a raid from Small Ant, I think, in like, I don't know, I can't remember how long I'd been streaming for at that point, but I remember specifically saying to my community, I've never had this many people in my chat before, and I just didn't know what to do with myself. I was so beside myself. I think there was like 300 people there, which is just wild to say because Small Ant, I think, pulls like 5,000 viewers now. So,
yeah.
You know, back then he raided me with like 200 to 300 people, and I was beside myself. And we were talking about speedrunning because Small Ant, I think, is, you know, he was known for, you know, his speedruns and, you know, in various games. And I was talking about it. And then I think my community kind of backed me a little bit and said, well, why don't you try it? And so eventually when I graduated out of my garage and I moved into a room, we started the second season of what I like to call the bubble team, which is my community.
Yes, yes.
And the second season was me learning how to speedrun. And so I started just really diving into speedrunning and that particular game. And with that also came a community of people behind me. And I there are so many communities of speedrunning, you know, on Twitch and, you know, within speedrun.com, which is the website that hosts, you know, all of the speedrunning leaderboards. There are so many communities of games, but one thing that really stood out to me was how the Legend of Zelda community is so unbelievably supportive. Like,
super supportive.
So supportive. And I got into it and I had, like, as soon as my titles, you know, on Twitch were like learning to speedrun, any percent, Breath of the Wild, I had people jumping in being like, oh, do you need a hand? Do you want me to jump on Discord with you? I'll show you how to do this. And I was just so taken back. And so from then on, it just became a journey of how to learn how to speedrun and, you know, getting to know the people within the community. And that built some really wonderful friendships for me as well. Like, I have some friends in that community who, I'm really incredibly thankful for.
By the way, I'm so glad I have you as my first guest because you've been streaming for years. You know how to keep a conversational flow going. And I can just...
So much.
No, it's
I'm
good.
So
it's
sorry.
Good. That means I can just ask you questions and, like, I can talk less for once.
So, word vomiting.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, so if you guys don't know, so Smallland is like one of the biggest Twitch streamers in the world, one of the biggest YouTubers in the world. I also watched him quite a lot as well. But the thing I wanted to emphasize as well, so if you guys don't know what a raid is, so we also have listeners who aren't from Twitch, so this is also just to clarify what a raid is. So a raid is when a streamer finishes their stream, they have the option to send their viewers to another streamer, usually in the form of like paying it forward. You don't have to do it as a streamer, but it's just nice to do it. And one thing I'll say for myself is that raids were huge in my growth as a streamer as well. Because the next thing we'll most likely touch on is discoverability. Being discovered as a live streamer is the hardest thing on the face of the earth as a content creator. Because you can have the greatest content in the world, but if no one knows you exist, you can stream 20 hours a day and nobody will find you. So Alex was raided by a number of streamers, including myself. We got raided by bigger streamers who gave us the opportunity to grow our audience, have exposure to a new audience so they can get to know us. Alex had raids from, I believe, like Smallant, Point Crow, whole load of people, including me as well. I got raided by massive streamers as well. And so, like, usually you get like a 2,000 viewer raid and you're not going to, like, the next time you go live, have 2,000 new viewers, right?
No.
Probably like to 10 of those people will stick around. Luckily.
Yeah, if you're lucky, yeah.
And I found that the majority of my longest supporters, like I'm talking 6+ years, the majority of them came from raids. So I want to give a big shout out to all the bigger streamers who helped us grow along the way. And then we do it too. Like when we finish streams, we send raids to the next person as well. So I was going to ask you this, Alex. So tell me about the moment you became a Twitch partner. When you finally... Because I remember the journey for your applications. Mm-hmm. I know I got a bit lucky with a first try. You know, very, very lucky with that one.
I'm still blown away.
I don't know how I got a first try. But I know you worked really hard to get partner. So
I'm mulling about it still.
Here we go. Tell us your experience from when you hit the average requirement of streaming a number of days, number of hours, and 75 average viewership to applying and then finally getting it. Come on, tell us. I'm curious. I need to know from the Alex perspective. Let's go.
I'll do you one better. I'll take it back a little bit. I'll you know, speaking about raids and whatnot, I think one thing that actually ended up like pushing me to that 75 average was not necessarily like all of those raids, because like I don't know, for people who don't know how Twitch works, raids are great for discoverability, but what they don't do is they don't actually add to your concurrent viewership or your CCV. And so when you get a raid, that number doesn't just instantly boost you up to being able to apply for partner, which like Richard said, you have to have 75 average viewers. So raids are fantastic for you to build and find more people in your community. But for me, one thing that I found that was incredibly helpful was being able to collaborate with other people. So not only were the raids really great to meet people, but I was able to then collaborate and, you know, do really fun, silly streams with, yeah, people like Point Crow and, you know, other people within the Zelda community. So for me, that ended up bringing me to that 75 average viewers. And oh boy, let me tell you, I was so excited when we hit that average. I remember we were like just sort of like on the cusp of like 75 for so long. We were like bouncing between like 73, 74, 74.86, like something really, really silly. I'm just going to cough really quickly.
Yep, go for it.
She's still recovering. So for me, I Yeah, it was really funny because when I finally did hit that 75 average viewership, it was such a moment of relief for me because it is a grind. It is an absolute grind to get to that moment. It is so difficult to get there. And anyone who's a streamer who is applying, or sorry, who's trying to get to that milestone, I'm going to go on a limb and just say really quickly, it's a great milestone to hit. But don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't think that as soon as you hit partner, it's going to open up a world for you. Because I could see you smirking. I know you know what I'm going to say. It's a great milestone to hit. And I don't want to discourage anybody from hitting that milestone. And I know you're probably thinking, you have the purple tick. Like, what do you know? It doesn't really change much. Like, there are affiliates out there who I know who are doing more and doing better than some partners. And they don't have a tick. So I think for me, the biggest thing that I will say that getting partner does open up to you is it gives you just a little bit more validation as a creator. Like, I feel like you know, brands sometimes might look at that and they might just associate you with being a little bit more of a, I guess, consistent creator or like a more established creator. But that doesn't mean that it's your ticket into working with, you know, bigger brands and more people and the collaborations of your dreams. Doesn't really work like that. However, my personal journey, Richard said that he only applied once to get partner. And I don't think I know anyone who's ever had that happen. My applications, I don't remember the actual months. I remember, I think it was like late 2021, I believe, that I had gotten the path to partner like tick of approval, so you could apply, so you have to hit all these milestones and then you can apply. I applied 6 times and
it was six. Oh my goodness.
Times.
For some reason I thought it was four. Like, oh, it was six.
No, it was on the sixth application was when I got it. So in that process you have to like write this massive like essay, dissertation, if you will, about applying and like what you'll do for Twitch and like, you know, the whole process behind that and, you know, what you bring to the platform, which is fine. Like, I understand they want to know that you're going to be an asset. But for me, it was really difficult because I'd like held an average above 75, which is a key thing they look for. Like, they want to see you hold that average for like a long time without any raise, without any support like that. They just want to see you and your community hold that and not partner pushing it. Because I know a lot of people will do a partner push, and that's something that I regret doing. Like, I regret telling my community, like, oh, we're going to partner push, like, you know, remove the URL, refer rate, like, get rid of that. So it's
trying to kind of game the system, trying to, like, game your way in. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I regret doing that because it just doesn't look good. Because at the end of the day, if you're a good creator and you're doing everything right, you shouldn't need to do that. Right. And I remember you telling me this, and I was like, yeah, but I just want it.
Oh, did your audio die? It's okay.
Oh, sorry. I just saw the Discord disconnected for a hot minute, but we're
okay. We're good. We're good.
Okay, we're good.
Thank goodness.
Cut.
No, you know, I'm gonna leave that in. I'm gonna leave that in. We'll keep it raw. It's fine.
If anyone from my community is watching this, they know that my camera tends to like freeze quite often anyway. So it's a miracle.
Hey, mine too.
That it's on
this mine too. Well, speaking of cameras, my camera setup, Alex helped me set this up years ago. So because
yes,
I'm horrifically bad at that stuff, and I literally copied her setup, her camera. Like the lens, everything. Yep.
Yes, and like, I remember.
Like the F3.5. And yeah, anyway, back on story. I just so have to throw like that in. Back on story. So yes, keep going.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about film making and cameras later. But to the point of my story. So I feel like I rambled a little bit.
That's good. It's great.
I applied 6 times. And yeah, on the sixth attempt, I think I had gotten path to partner maybe in like September. And then you have to wait like 3 weeks in between each application. So I think I ended up getting it in like January or February of 2022, I believe. So it's been a bit over a year since I've been partner now, a year and a half basically. And it's been a really wonderful journey. I love that I managed to hit that milestone. I'm glad that I spent time with my community building it up, and it was a really wonderful moment. I have photos, and I can send these to you. I have photos of me sitting at my desk, and my partner at the time took photos of me crying because I was just bawling my eyes out because I'd finally done it. Like, I think it was just more gratifying because I had applied so many times. And I've just had a wonderful time within the Twitch ANZ community ever since. Like, I've had the opportunity to do so many things ever since that happened. Like, very shortly after that, I got to go on the front page for Women's International week or month, I can't remember. I got to join Twitch Ultimate Royale for their event that they held in Sydney a couple years back. Or sorry, I mean, year or two back. Yeah, I just had a lot of opportunities.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of that. You've been absolutely crushing it on the scene.
Oh, thank you. I mean, look, I feel like I attribute that to the partner badge, but like, it's not necessarily the partner badge, but you know, it's, like I said, it does allow for some opportunities, but you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket. Like if you're gonna really work hard for something, you know, make sure you know, diversify your content as well. That's really important. But
and I think, so I wanted to say, like, so Alex and I, we had a quick chat about this before the podcast, and we're going to talk about this now. So there's something, you know, I guess we'll make this like the final part of the talk. You know what? Maybe we should have needed like 3 hours of talk at this point, because it's like, whoa, it's like, we're like, you know what? I don't think 40 minutes is enough. It's like,
we got talking. It's fine. Okay, it's got time. It's all
okay,
good.
It's like, we're going to need episode 2, 3, 4, 5 follow up. Okay. So the thing that Alex and I both experienced is something I'm going to call, and the majority of us know this going into streaming, is that there is a harsh reality about growing as a streamer. Mm-hmm. We all have huge dreams and goals, and I'm not saying you can't make it, but to put it into perspective, I'll give you guys some statistics here. To become a Twitch partner, that puts you roughly in the top 0.5% of all people who ever stream on Twitch, of the millions of people who ever go live. To be able just to apply and become a partner puts you in the top 0.5% of all streamers who ever go live on Twitch. That means hitting the 75 average, applying, keeping the average. And even that alone, for the majority of people who become partner, is still not enough for a full-time living to live off as a streamer. Take it from me. I tried full-time streaming for years. I did that along working with a job, and I was able to be okay. Now, obviously, there's a million other ways I probably could have addressed it. I probably could have focused more on making videos instead of streaming 8 hours a day. We can go into that. But I wanted to ask Alex's perspective on, because you also decided to make different changes. You streamed full-time during lockdowns, by the way. You went through a period of streaming full-time during the lockdown. So if we all know, a lot, the majority of us Australians went through the lockdown period very harshly compared to a lot of the world. Melbourne and Sydney in particular, we got locked down for months and months and months. So both Alex and I were pretty much like, you know, unable to go to work in offices. We had a lot of businesses closed down, so we had a lot of time to stream. And that's where I saw the most of my success, because there was a lot of people watching and the demand was high. But then after the lockdowns, a lot of us saw a huge decline. So my question for you is, what can you say about the harsh reality of streaming? Like, yes, you might become a partner, you know, you've done all the work and, you know, you're even getting paid. Like, you're making a monthly paycheck from Twitch. But what's missing? What are people not seeing?
Oh, that's a good, I like that question. I like that a lot. So I think when it comes to streaming, and, you know, I'll come back to the COVID situation. I think for me personally, when I started streaming back in 2019, I was quite, I guess, fortunate when I went into COVID and the lockdowns. I think our first lockdown started in about March of 2020, I believe, or April of 2020. And Sydney and Melbourne had varying levels of lockdown. So we both, you know, both myself and Richard experienced it. But I would argue that Richard in Melbourne had a far more severe experience, you know, with lockdowns. But I think I was quite fortunate going into it that I already started streaming. Like, I know a lot of creators had picked up streaming because of the lockdowns, whereas I was already streaming. I had about a 15 to 20 viewer average going into those lockdowns. So I think for me, if anything, the lockdown sort of accelerated my process, because I was able to then stream full-time, although I was streaming pretty full-time. My job prior to COVID was working at a rock climbing gym, and so I was able to stream during the day, a good chunk of the day. Like, I'd start at 9 a.m. and then I would go to work at like 4 p.m. So in that time frame, I'd stream. And that was my routine for like the longest time, and that allowed me to really develop my community because I was really consistent. And then from then, obviously, COVID happened and gyms and other businesses were made to close down and shut down because no one, you know, was going to, you know, no one could safely use a gym. So at that point, I started, you know, content creating and streaming full time. And I was really lucky that I had a community behind me just to support me. And I remember, you know, getting paychecks from Twitch that were, you know, kind of supplementing the income that I was losing from not working, which was fantastic. I was incredibly lucky. But I guess from that, in terms of, you know, the creators who then grew through COVID and have now gone back to work, and people like their viewership has now gone back to work as well. And, you know, the whole world has kind of, I guess, opened up again and kind of gone back to somewhat normal, quote unquote normal. it's a really harsh reality that a lot of creators out there who did grow in that time simply didn't grow enough to be full-time creators. And look, some of them did, and that's fantastic. But if you're streaming and focusing as like on Twitch as your main platform, I feel like this is going to be very harsh. You are never going to, you know, I think be able to do or make enough to sustain yourself. Like Twitch itself, you can make income on Twitch. You can make a good paycheck on Twitch, but it is very hard to rely solely on your community for subscriptions to, and for bits and donations and stuff like that as well, or tips if you want to call them that. It's incredibly hard because not only is it relying on a variable income, it's just out of your control, essentially. Like one month you'll be making a lot of money and then other months you will just not make much at all. So I think that inconsistency is what really a lot of creators struggle with. So for me personally, when I stopped streaming full time, I ended up getting a full-time job, and it wasn't necessarily because I wasn't making enough money, because I was pretty much making a full-time income. I was a full-time content creator up until August of 2022. My circumstances, wow, I can't speak today. Circumstances personally changed. I ended up leaving a long-term relationship, and it just meant that I had a whole dynamic shift within my household. So I needed to basically have something that was more stable. And although streaming for me, I had a good income, I just needed something that I know was going to be consistent. So, and I vowed to myself that I would continue streaming whilst I was working full time. And I don't think I understood how difficult that was going to be. I really, really struggled with the idea of, full time work and full time streaming. So streaming basically took a break for me. And then I ended up leaving that role that I started in August of 2022, very early this year in 2023. And then I started a new role where I am very happy in my new role, but it hasn't allowed me a whole lot of time to stream. So I think in terms of, I've kind of just shared my story about where I went in content creating. I'm so sorry.
That's good. That's what I was hoping to get to. That I was actually going to ask you about that, like about the timeline. But yeah, keep going. Like
that's the thing. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And that's the thing. Like for me personally, like when I was making a full-time income, and I think a lot of people, when they do start streaming, they want to know about money, and they want to know, like, you know, I guess where it's going to, like, what's like where it comes from and like what the best way is to go about it. For me personally, I was able to make an income from Twitch and, you know, like I said, subscriptions and stuff, but I found because that was inconsistent, I really upskilled myself and I ended up getting really good at filmmaking and editing and photography. And so I found myself working with more brands and sponsorships because I had done that. And I was able to not only do a lot of sponsored content, but I was also able to create what's called UGC or user generated content, which a lot of brands will, you know, look to creators to make for them. So then they can take that content and post it on their own socials separate of the creator. So I started doing a lot of that, and that, you know, really helped me, I guess, get through not only COVID and content creating, but it also allowed me to be a full-time creator at the time. So, and that's something that I still do to this day, and I'm looking to help, you know, bridge that gap eventually. I love my job and I love what I do. I think it's so fulfilling, but do I miss full-time content creating? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would love to get back into it.
Especially, putting all those years into it. Like I wanted to emphasize, it's like, you know, like Alex was talking about, like, and I also experienced this too. It's like, if you solely rely on streaming as your source of growth, as your source of income, there's only so many hours you can trade. There's only so much mental capacity you have to do it. Because, you know, like Alex was saying, like, I've experienced it where, like, one month I'm making, like, more than I ever have in any other job in my life. And then the following month I'm making pennies. It's like, and for the same amount of effort, same amount of blood, sweat, and tears. And you're just like, how can I rely on this? So I guess where I wanted to practically focus the conversation here is, okay, so if streaming is just the beginning, what should creators actually be doing with the content they stream? Because you know that the most like basic meta of streaming is to just go live. I'm going to go live, I'm going to stream 10 hours, and I'm going to blow up. That's not going to cut it. That is not going to cut it for even the biggest streamers cannot rely on that anymore. We're talking about streamers who have 2,000, 1,000 average viewers. That's not going to cut it moving forward. So I have a take on this. And, you know, we've seen people like Small Ant do it and like Point Crow and like other creators, Ludwig, for example. So if somebody streams for 5 hours, what should they be doing once they're done streaming?
Cut up the VOD.
Explain what that means. Cut up the VOD. What does that mean? Go.
So, and this is one thing that I guess I can speak to quite well because it's what I did, right? So I think if this is, I guess, advice for any like smaller creators out there who, or even big creators as well, like if you are streaming on Twitch as your main platform and that's what you want to do, you need to be planning your streams out and you need to be planning your content out, because it is not enough to just stream on Twitch. If you want to be a full-time creator, it is just simply not enough to stream only on Twitch, because streaming on Twitch is, like you said, Richard, it takes up so much time and so much energy. It's a very, very exhaustive task, right? So if you're going to do that, you need to make it worthwhile. So what I would do and what I did do was every single stream that I did, it was planned out with an idea in mind. It was, you know, some, for me, it was challenge content. Like I would, you know, not only did I speed run, but I would do collaborative streams. I would do challenge content. And then I would film that. Oh, sorry. I would film that with some, like I would record it in OBS and I would do it with that challenge in mind. And I would narrate it, I would organize it, and then I would clip it and ship it off to my editor. And that's one thing as well. Like when you do come into, I guess, a little bit of income from streaming, you should always try and reinvest it back into streaming so you can continue to keep growing. And for me, I did that with an editor. So I would take my content with the idea that I had in my mind. I would send that content to my editor. I had a list out of all the things that I wanted. I had a plan for the entire video. And they would then help me curate that and put it together. And then I threw it up onto YouTube. I turned it into shorts. Like you should be basically any long form content that you make, you should be capitalizing on that content. You should turn it into shorts. You should turn it into clips. You should even turn it into highlights. You should do everything with that content. Because if you're going to spend like 8 hours streaming daily or 6 hours streaming daily, you shouldn't just stop there. Like it shouldn't just end there. You need to take that content and you need to turn it into something else. Otherwise, you're going to get left behind and, you know, you're not going to be able to keep up with the other creators who are doing that. So, and a really good example of this, I came across him the other day. His name is Handsome Fella, and he is funniest. Oh my God. I came across his TikTok and he is so funny, and seemingly he's grown from 0 to 100K on Twitch within like a year, right? And that is purely because he has been taking his Minecraft clips and other like silly games and just compiling his clips and putting them on TikTok, and that's it. But you know, he's gone and done this post stream, right? Like he'll post stream, he'll go and grab these clips and he'll turn them into little compilations, and it really showcases his personality, right? So even if you don't necessarily have a challenge in mind or something like a narrative in mind, you can do something like that. But as long as you are taking your content and turning it into something else, it's so important.
Yes. I was hoping you were going to say that. So I guess I'll quickly summarize that part. Nice. Guys, yeah, no, that's great. So guys, so the biggest misconception as a streamer is streaming, you grow, like the idea is that you grow when you stream. Mm-hmm. Yes, to a certain degree you will. But the reality is, like, I'll give you guys an example. We all know Clint Stevens. This guy streams once every 2 months. And every time he goes live, he's bigger than he was before. Why? Because he has hundreds and hundreds of stream highlights on YouTube, on every platform, that are growing him even when he's not live. His brand is continuously being discovered and grown. Videos he made 6 years ago are still helping him be discovered. He has something called evergreen content. All right, so evergreen content is stuff that will last for years to come, not just a single moment. And if you can focus on streaming to make content that grows even when you're not live, even when you are live, people should be watching your videos while you're asleep in bed.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
It should get to the point where somebody who's never been to your stream before feels like they already know you because they've watched your last 50 videos. I've seen people go to Small Ant's channel, Point Crow's channel, Clint's channel, Ludwig's, 39 Daff, and the people in their chat, it's their first time in the chat, but they're already integrated in the chat because they've seen the videos for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Alex, by the way, we're going to have to do follow-up episodes because we've got way more to talk about.
I know. We feel like we didn't even skim the surface.
I know. This is just the beginning. So, I know you got to work soon and I got stuff to do as well. So, Alex, thank you for joining. For the people who want to reach you, who want to find you, where can they find you on socials and where would you like them to contact you if they have more further questions?
No, definitely. So, I guess you can find me on my most active platforms. I would say probably Twitter at the moment. So I am Ali Lynn Twitch on Twitter, or if you just search Alexandra Lynn, I'm sure it'll come up. But everywhere else, I'm Alexandra Lynn. I'm on Instagram, Twitch, TikTok. Yeah, everywhere. I'm everywhere. So yeah, definitely please come and say hi to me. I think my DMs are open. If they're not, I do have a business email in my my bio. You can email me there if you need to. If it's a business related, please don't spam it. But otherwise, yeah, it's been really great to chat to you. I'm sorry that we didn't have more time to go through all the topics, because it's just such a it's there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, we need like 20 hours worth of content coming. Yeah. So but yeah, on behalf of the audience, thank you, Alex, for joining the show. Also, if just to clarify, guys, so Alex does call me Richard because that's the name I used on Twitch for years.
Yeah,
and that's
sorry.
Totally fine. No, it's fine, it's fine. Like it's the English translation of my name, Fu. So if you guys were listening to the episode, you're like, oh, why is she calling him Richard? You know, it's like, oh yeah, because that's what I'm known as on Twitch. So you can call me either, guys. It's totally fine. I mostly use that name to kind of like stop myself from being doxxed. So dox is like when like a random stalker. We'll talk about that stuff next episode.
Oh,
like
yeah,
the whole whole like, you know, parasocial stalker like, situations that we all, and like for like women as well, especially on Twitch and content creators. But yeah, Alex, thank you so much for joining the show. This will be available on YouTube, Spotify, the majority of the podcast platforms. Please go follow Alex on Twitch as well. Twitch.tv/AlexandraLynn. Is it still Alexandra Lynn? And also the rest of her platforms, Instagram. She's awesome. We've been friends for how many years now? Over 4 years. She's helped me a lot. We've helped each other a lot throughout the years professionally and just as friends as well. And I believe you're coming down to Melbourne next year. So come hang out. And maybe we'll do like a live in-house recording, like at a sushi bar or something as well.
Oh my gosh, we can go grab dinner and we can live stream it. That'd be so fun. That would be a blast.
We gotta do some IRL real life content. All right, Alex. So we're gonna end the recording here, guys. Thank you. If you like the video, please like, comment, subscribe, leave a positive rating on Spotify if you're listening, and go check out Alex's content. She's absolutely smashing it. So take care, everyone. We'll see you next time, and thank you, Alex, for joining the show.
Thank you for having me. Bye.